I want to talk about family finances a little bit. Several years ago, I was at Plainview, Texas, and I was speaking primarily to just young people, and one of the subjects that they'd asked me to speak on was this particular subject, and so I had my subject matter directed towards them primarily, and as I look at this audience, it doesn't seem to be the appropriate approach, but nonetheless, we're going to talk about family finances a little bit tonight. The Bible speaks quite a bit about money and about being rich and about wealth. And basically what I'm going to do tonight, from the first part at least, is just simply read a lot of these passages with you or allow you to read them. And we're going to look at these together and point out some things that maybe we can draw from that might be a help to us, might be an encouragement to us, that might be a kind of a guideline. If it hasn't already in your life helped you in some way, well, maybe tonight we can say some things that will encourage you and help you in some way. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 16, we're going to talk about money is not everything, first of all. And obviously we know that, of course, but in our society, in this country that we live in, it's quite a bit, and it's important to us. We know that. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 16, the Bible says, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. Better is dinner with herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred." Proverbs 16, verse 8, "Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice." And if we will think about the sentiment of each one of these statements, I don't think anyone here would disagree with any of these terms that are mentioned here. Of course, no one's going to disagree with the scriptures that is gathered in an assembly such as this, but we'll not have any problem with understanding why it's stated to us. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, continuing the same thought. "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver." Now that's important. He that loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. "He who loves abundance with increase." This is also vanity. Psalms 37 verse 16. "A little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous." Matthew chapter 19, Jesus is speaking, and he gives a teaching here in regards to, we have the teaching of the rich young ruler that come to Jesus. And he wanted to know what he could do that he might have eternal life. Matthew chapter 19. Wanted to know what he could do to have eternal life. And understand that he was rich. He was well off. And he had a lot of wealth. And Jesus told him to obey the commandments. And he said, "Which?" And so Jesus named off part of the Ten Commandments that pertain to man's relationship with man. But he left out one. And the one he left out was, "Thou shalt not covet." But nonetheless, he read these or gave these commandments to the man, and he said, "Well, I've kept all of these from my youth up. What lack I yet?" And he said, "If thou will be perfect or complete, go sell what you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me." Remember how the story ends here, or this part of it at least ends. He went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. He didn't want to get rid of those possessions. They meant more to him than really following the Lord did, the possessions that he had. This is the danger that we have with wealth. And so these statements that are given to us, that's inspired and given to us in the scriptures, are for that very reason, to help us understand that there are things far more important in our life, in our society, than money, than wealth. Now, we understand it's important, and especially in this country. Sean and I were talking today about Nigeria. And I went to Nigeria in 2007. He's been over there several times, but he's been over there later than where I was. I don't know what the economy is like now. When we were over there, the unemployment rate was something like 80%. the inflation rate was completely through the roof. You know, it was just unreasonable what it was like over there. To be able to exist was just, that's what people treasured, just to be able to get up and have what was necessary to sustain life through the day. We brought a man back to the States by the name of Hyane. Say it for me, Sean. Hyane. Why couldn't I say that? Hyane. And Hyane stayed with us several days, and he put a presentation on and about the work that was going on in Nigeria, the work with the church. And we had a brother there that had come to visit, and when it was all over with, he had given quite a bit of money for that particular work. But he walked up to me and he handed me two $100 bills. And he said, "I want you to take this," or take Hyane, "and take him to the store and let him pick out something for his family or for himself to take back. Something personal. Something that wouldn't go directly to buying Bibles or doing the spreading of the gospel directly, but just for him, some benefit." So I said, "Okay, I'll do my best." And so I did. I took him. We have a Walmart superstore far from where I live, and that's where I took him. I thought, surely to goodness, Hyane can find something in Walmart. You know, that guy walked around for 45 minutes, and he couldn't find a way to spend that money. And you would think a person that come from a poverty state such as that he come from and where he lived, especially, this was 1997, at that time, and like I said, I'm not sure what it is like now, but I know then it was terrible. People just didn't have anything. But he couldn't find something to buy to take back. And I just kept telling him, "Hyane, this is for you. This, buy it for your friends over there if you want." But he just, you know, it was just something he couldn't wrap his head around. You know, I went to bed that night and I thought, you know, Evan, how much better off he is than we are. How much more content he was than we are in so many ways, you know. We worry about money. Margaret said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going to, well, stop at Walmart and get such and such and such and such. Two items, three. Can you do that?" "I can't." "She can, certainly can't. Go into Walmart and get two or three things. Maybe two or three shopping carts full, you know. But not two or three things." We live in a different, in a world where it's a lot different. And I understand that, and I know that, and I understand it takes money for us to operate and live, and we need that. I understand that. It's a part of our life. It's too much a part of our life, but it is. And it's a reality. I know that. But nonetheless, we need to be very, very careful, follow these passages and these scriptures, and not let the money be the thing that controls us, but rather we control the money, the wealth. The blessing of labor. Think about this. I said this one time, many years ago, probably 40 years ago, and I got called down pretty much for it by a leader from a church. And I made the statement that work was a blessing. It was one of the first blessings that God bestowed upon man. After the services, the leader of a congregation came up to me and said, "Young man, you've got that all wrong." I didn't think I was so young. I was in my 30s. But he says, "You've got that all wrong." He said, "Work's a curse that God placed on man." Well, that's not true. You go back and read the Genesis account, and that's really not true. Whenever God created Adam, where did he put him? He put him in the Garden of Eden, and what was he to do? He was to dress it and to keep it. He gave him a responsibility. He gave him something to do. Work is a blessing that we have. How many times have we seen people that have retired from a job that they've been a part of for 50 years or 40 years or 30 years or whatever, and then just die? Had a fellow that worked with us in the machine shop before I started preaching. I worked in a machine shop. And he was just looking forward to the day that he retired. He retired, and in 6 months, he died. He went home, and he sat down, and he watched Wheel of Fortune and Let's Make a Deal and those things on TV, and he died sitting in a chair. But he was a picture of health when he worked there at the plant with us. See, God creates us to be active and to be involved. How many times do we see people that retire, and maybe there are those in the audience tonight that have retired from one job, turn right around and get another, and retire from that. I was talking to somebody the other day that told me about their dad, I believe it was, that had retired from two jobs and was working at yet another, a business that he had started. See, God creates us to do that. Now, granted, some of the difficulties and challenges and hardships that came along with the work later on because of sin, or came about because of sin, we understand that also. But work itself is a blessing that God has given to us, and it's a blessing, the blessing of labor. Proverbs 10, verse 4, he becometh poor that doeth, that dealeth with a slack hand, but he that be diligent maketh rich. Now, I know that some of these passages I'm reading kind of sound like they're contradicting one another, but the emphasis here is being committed to the work that you're involved in. That's what he's stressing in this particular reading here, Proverbs 13 and 11. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. Maybe it would help to understand a little bit about one of the purposes of this particular letter being written. The people at Thessalonica had heard the gospel, had received the gospel. Church was established there. They were committed to the faith to a degree, but they were learning, and they had a lot to learn, like many of us do when we first start out in our Christian endeavor. But these people didn't understand about the Lord's return. In this particular chapter, he deals with that particular thing, that he didn't want them to be ignorant, that the day of the Lord was not going to come, that there were certain things that were going to take place first. But they were concerned about that, and I think that's part of why this particular statement is made. But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I write unto you. But you yourselves are taught by God to love one another, and indeed you do so towards all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more. He didn't want us to quit, set back. Go ahead and work. Get involved. Live your life. That you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk properly towards those that are outside, and that you may lack nothing. He wanted people to work. He didn't want them to be busybodies. He didn't want them to be lazy. He wanted them to be active and involved. The wisdom of taking advice. Okay? And this is one of the troubles, one of the things that I see a lot of times with young people that are starting out, is taking the advice oftentimes from those that are older and those that have lived their life in regards to how they handle their finances. When we get out on our own, I'm 75 years old, I'll be 76 this year, so I guess I can't say we getting out on our own, that was a long time ago. But we wanted to stand on our own two feet, didn't we? Don't you? If that's you, stand on your own two feet. You want to be responsible. You wanted to be in charge. You don't want to be dependent on somebody else to ask them how to do this or how to do that or how to live this way or should I buy this or should I buy that? A fellow back in our area is in Texas, North Texas, Gunner, Texas area, passed away. Tex Monk passed away. Tex and I were about the same age. He's a little older than I was. Tex had been in ill health, Parkinson's, for the last few years. And his son, Alan, he had four daughters and a son in that order. And his son, Alan, had always wanted to go into farming. I enjoyed very much when, was you at his funeral, Sean? Whenever Alan preached his daddy's funeral, spoke at his daddy's funeral, he pointed out that very thing. He said, I wanted to go into farming with my daddy, or said, I wanted to go into farming. I wanted that more than anything in the world. I just wanted to farm. And he said, we didn't have anything. But he said, I'd go to the John Deere place, and I'd go to these different places and look at all of this equipment. And he said it was just outlandish and all. But he said, my dad come to me. And he said, Alan, if you've got to do that, then you take my equipment and we will use it together and we will both share the equipment until you can kind of get on your feet and get started. You know, I have heard other fathers say that and grandfathers say that about their sons or grandsons. And the sons and grandsons would throw their shoulders back and say, I can handle it all by myself. And then dig a deep hole that they get into where they have problems and where they have difficulty. Alan does very well today. His dad passed away. He was a good man. I loved him. And he's gone. But Alan continues on, and he's successful at what he does because he did not reject his father's counsel and his advice. Use the advice. Seek it. Whenever they make suggestions, listen to what they have to say and give attention to it. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. Again, Proverbs 16:16. How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. Listen to the advice and counsel, and if there's nobody going to step up and give it to you, go ask somebody. I don't care if you're one who uses farming for an example. This is a community. I guess there's farming that goes on around here, cattle, raising cattle, ranching, whatever. Go find somebody. I would just imagine that if you went and talked to someone that was already involved in that and had been involved in several years and sought their counsel and their advice, they would give you honest advice. They probably would not tell you or give you advice that would get you in financial challenges and difficulty. But listen to that. We can't have everything that men and women that have worked for years and years and years and years, that has saved and scraped and done such and such to get where they are, we can't expect to start out the same way. Can't do that. Had a guy in our part of the community that farmed cotton a lot, didn't farm a lot, just small little farm. And people had talked to him about going to the coffee shop with all the other farmers and such like. He said, I haven't got time. I've got to work, and I've got to stay busy at what I'm doing. So we need to be careful. Matthew chapter 13, there's several parables in this chapter. Matthew chapter 13, Jesus tells about a guy that's farming. And I just love this picture here. Man plowing in his field. Verse 44. Man's plowing in his field, and he finds a treasure while he's plowing in the field. Now, you just picture this. I don't know what you picture. I see a guy, try to put it back in that time frame, and he's behind an old ox, or maybe a team of oxen, and he's got an old plow, probably an old wooden plow. Let's see, John Deere made the first metal plow, wasn't he? Well, it's probably an old wooden plow. It's long before John Deere was born. And he's following along and plowing, and all of a sudden he hits something. And he thinks, how many times have I plowed this field, and how many stumps and rocks have I carried out of this? I'm embellishing the story just a little bit. But anyway, he goes up, and he starts clearing it away, you know. And here's this treasure chest. Now, he's never seen a treasure chest, but this has got to be a treasure chest. It just has to be, because it's something he never precious that there are no something. And it's really something to see. Lock on it, gets a rock, knocks the lock off, opens it up, and there's jewels, and there's wealth untold. Read the verse now while I'm doing this. Don't just look at me. Look at that verse. I didn't get it printed out, have I? Shame on me. And what does he do? He covers it back up. And he hides it. And he goes and he gets everything he owns. Maybe that old wooden plow. Maybe that team of ox, whatever it is. Maybe it's all of the dishes in the cabin that he's got. Everything he's got, he gets together. He takes it and he sells it for all he can get out of it. And he goes to the guy that owns the land that he's farming. And he says, how much for that piece of land? Such and such. And he counts everything he has, everything that he owned, that he sold to get this money, and it took every bit of it to buy that piece of land. And that treasure then is his. Now, what's he comparing that to? That'd be kind of, let's see, would that be like you're a tenant farmer? That means you're renting the land from somebody else, like that guy was evidently, and you strike oil. Oh, you don't want to tell him about it, so you go buy the land. That sounds kind of shady in a way, doesn't it? Well, you'd just be rich, wouldn't you? You'd have all that oil. But what was the treasure like? Look at the passage. What was it? The kingdom of heaven is likened to a man plowing in the field. And he finds that treasure. What's the treasure? It's the kingdom of God. What's my point here? Why bring this up in this particular study? It's because that's the most valuable thing that you can find. It's the most valuable thing that you can have. Are you a member of the body of Jesus Christ tonight? Have you been washed by His blood? If you have, I promise you, that is your greatest, greatest treasure. That right there. If you haven't, then knowing about Him, learning about Him, accepting that sacrifice for your sins will be the greatest treasure and greatest gift that you can possibly have that you can ever receive. Okay? Let's continue on. I get sidetracked here. The danger of focusing only on money. The danger of focusing only on money. Ecclesiastes 5 and 10. You understand a lot of these statements that we're reading were written by Solomon. Solomon, very wealthy person. Very wealthy indeed. That makes what he says that much more meaningful. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. You think Solomon was satisfied with all the wealth that he had? When the queen from the east came and saw all that he had and all that he had accomplished in life and all the wealth that he had, she said, well, half hadn't been told about what you have. But you know, Solomon was miserable. None of that brought him pleasure or brought him happiness. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. He who loves abundance with increase, this also is vanity. Psalms 37:16, a little hath that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. And he does. Just because a person has money and wealth or accumulates that or acquires that or earns that doesn't mean that they're wicked. And certainly we know that. 1 Timothy 6:11, great gain. The great gain that really counts. Okay, and it's not just wealth. Let's read on. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world. It's certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, food and clothing, with those things we shall be content. By the way, let me pause right here. As some of you probably are aware, a lot of these passages are from the New King James, and I use that a lot anymore, so if I try to quote from the King James, and this is the New King James, well, just be patient with me. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. But the love of money, or for the love of money, is the root of all kinds of evil, or all evil, for which while some have strayed from the faith, in their greediness, and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience. gentleness. Seek the things that are the most valuable, most important to us. Best way to become a slave is to become a borrower. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. I've mentioned a couple of times this week already that I was raised by my grandparents, finally, when my mother ran out of brothers for me to live with. And finally, with the last brother that she had left me with, took me to my dad's parents, my grandparents, and left me there, and that's where I stayed, which was the greatest blessing that could happen to a little boy like me at that time. My granddaddy was a poor old dirt farmer. People talk about being dirt poor. Now, I'm telling you, we were poor. We were poor. And he rented a farm. He rented 160 acres. But he was able to get into the dairy business. He would milk anywhere from 6 to 10 cows. We milked by hand, or they milked by hand. I was a little small at that time. Milked by hand and would sell this milk to the dairy. And little by little, that and with his farming, they made a pretty good living. They were doing pretty good, better than he had ever hoped to do. But they didn't own the land. You ever hear of a fellow by the name of Dale Robinson? Anybody ever heard of that name? You know who Dale Robinson was? He was an actor, and he was from Oklahoma. He was the actor on the Tales of Wells Fargo, all you old Western cowboy people that like those kind of movies. He came, and his brother bought 200 acres, a half a mile, from where we were renting at 160 acres of land. Wasn't too long till Dale Robinson joined with his brother, and they formed what was known as the Haymaker Ranch. They raised quarter horses. And they broadened the boundaries of that place until they owned all the land right next to that 160 acres that my granddaddy was renting. One day, the son of the woman that owned the farm that my granddad rented came to the house and said, Lee, that's what they call my granddaddy, Lee, it's Robert Lee, said, Miss Summers wants to sell this place. I don't think it was Miss Summers. I think it was Buck Weller, the son-in-law. But nonetheless, he came and says, she wants to sell the place. Dale Robinson had all the money in the world. He said, well, I've been saving a little bit. Things have been going well the last few years. What is she asking? And the price that was laid before him was just completely out of this world. He swallowed the lump in his throat, and he thought, well, now we start all over. We moved on a farm. We didn't know at the time that this was God blessing our lives beyond measure because we moved into a little old community on an old rundown 200-acre farm. I mean, you talk about rundown, poor, hadn't been farmed, hadn't been taken. It was in pitiful shape, but it was where she lived, and I met her, and that's why it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me was us moving there. But we got by pretty good for a year because he had some money, you know, a little bit, not much, but a little bit. We made it for a year, and then we were just about to go completely under. So my granddaddy went to the Farm Home Administration, and the man said, let me come out to your place, and we'll look over what you have. And granddaddy wanted to borrow $1,500. You know what he wanted with $1,500? He wanted to make it the rest of the year and next year, have enough to buy seed and gas so he could put in another cotton crop. The last one had failed miserably, and to sow some wheat and oats and such like. And that's what he wanted. And he had it figured out there that $1,500 to do. The guy looked over the land. He said, Mr. Jones said, we'll loan you the money, but we'd a lot rather loan you $5,000 and you buy a bunch of cattle and such like with you. My granddaddy just began to shake his head, said, not on your life. Not on your life. You see, he owed about $1,000 in 1929. You know what happened then? It took him forever to get that paid back, and he said, I'll never borrow again. So he was swallowing a lot to be able to ask for $1,500 from the Farm Home Administration. But we got that, and we got it paid off. He wouldn't let me borrow anything to buy a calf, to buy a car, or buy anything. We have the money. We bought it. He died poor. I left home poor. But I was the richest guy in our school. I really was, because I was raised by godly people that sought first the kingdom of God, and we never missed a church service. We were there every time the doors opened, and that was the most important thing that was shown to me as I grew up in that home. And that meant more to me and has meant more to me over the years than anything that they might have accomplished with that farm. They could have bought that 200-acre farm. They didn't, but they could have. It was owned by a family member, but they could have. You understand where we place our values and where we place, but if we be careful about borrowing money. Let my story get away from me here. I don't want them to define this lesson. I'd kind of like the lesson to define my stories. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Isn't that true? They control you. They control what you do. How much? See, the less we can borrow, the more we can stay out of debt, the better our life is going to be. I mentioned last night, whenever I said I was going to talk about this, that one of the greatest problems I think we have in our society today is this right here. This is my Visa bank card. That's out of date, isn't it? It's a MasterCharge card. See, that's how much I use that silly thing. I don't even know what we got. Here's the one I use. I put everything, and that's our Discover card. But that's one of the biggest dangers that we face today, that young people face today, is a credit card. Now, for all the time that the University of Oklahoma had Bob Stoops as their football coach, we had season tickets. We dropped our season tickets. Bob Stoops quit. I guess that's why. I don't know. But during that 18 years of going to football games, you know what they would do? You walk. If you're going to a college football game sometime, they're always trying to get money for something. You go across, and they want to sign you up for a credit card. And there'll just be lines of people and kids, young people, college kids, lined up, signing up for a credit card, or a Visa card, or whatever, some kind of credit card, to sign up for that. And if you'll sign up for that, you get a T-shirt that says, Oklahoma University. See, and I'm sure that all colleges pretty much that way. Now, what do you think that does? We've gone home a lot of times now. What are these kids that sign up for these credit cards doing? They're running up a bill. Do their parents know that they're running this bill up? What's going to happen? And what happens whenever you run up a credit card bill up to $20,000? I can't comprehend that. I pay this Discover card off every month. If I couldn't do that, I wouldn't have it. I'd cut it up. And we have done that, haven't we, Mama? Shake your head. Yes, we did. We've cut it up with a pair of scissors because we couldn't do that. It would get us in trouble. Okay? And if you can't pay it off, you don't use it. You use it. You don't let it use you and control you. But what happens to the people that run up a credit card bill or a debt like that for $50,000, $60,000 and they can't pay it? Now, I may hit a nerve here with some people. I don't know. But what happens? Well, there's a way you can get out of that. You can sign. Okay. Somebody pays that. Somebody does. It affects our economy. It affects what you buy. It affects virtually everything, every aspect of our economy. You get tartar prices going up, up, up. That's one of the reasons that they do. See? We're slaves to those that we borrow from. They control us. Romans chapter 13, verse 6. For because of this, you also pay taxes. Talking about the government here in this particular chapter. don't have all the verses I need here. For they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, taxes to whom taxes are due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything, owe no one anything, except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. Owe no man anything. Is that possible? It's hard to do, but it is. You know, I have met and heard of people from Asia, from the Vietnam era, that have come to America that stayed debt free. I have met people from across the border to the south that have come here, started working. It might have been taking care of lawns or whatever they could do, and they saved their money. And then pretty soon they work in a restaurant. I'm describing one fellow that I know of. And he works real hard. And then pretty soon he has an opportunity to buy that restaurant. He never borrows a penny. He pays cash for his car. He pays cash for his house. Everything. How do you do that? Well, it's what you don't do that allows you to be able to do some of those things and to be able to accomplish some of those things. I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying that it's possible to accomplish things that sometimes we look at and say it's impossible to live that way in America, to be debt free. I agree with you. It's a challenge. I wasn't able to do it. In fact, we wanted to pay our house off early, and we had a friend in the church that said you'll be better off just to wait till you're 65 to pay it off because of taxes and whatever. And so we did. But you understand. And I'm probably wrong. David will probably get on to me and tell me, you just don't know about tax situations. And you're right, I don't. But I hear these advertisements on radio and on television. You owe the IRS $4,000? How would you like to be able to call such and such number and we'll get that debt down to $400 or whatever? I'm probably throwing out some wild figures here, but they are outrageous to me. And I look at Mark and I say, well, how much money do you have to make in the first place to owe the IRS that kind of money? See? Something's wrong in there, in my opinion, my thinking, and I'm probably wrong about that. Sounds to me like money mismanagement somewhere along the line. And like I said, I'm probably interfering in areas where I shouldn't. Family budgets. Let's look at that just a minute. What I'm going to do, and I've done this all week, so no sense in me just stopping now, since I'm working on a very sensitive subject here tonight. And if I step on too many toes and y'all want me to go home tomorrow, I will. But I'm doing the best I can here. I want to show you a budget that's very similar to what Margaret and I started out with. As you've heard me say this week, I was in the military, in the Navy, when we got married. And within 2 years, I was out. Was going to church with a man that had 10 acres, a house and 10 acres, that he said he would sell it to me and carry the note at 6% interest. House was $7,000 and his little old square house, this little old bitty thing. And but it was a house, $7,000 for that house and 10 acres, and he'd carry the note, 6% interest. And we didn't have anything. We didn't have anybody. We didn't have a family that had anything. We just, you know, we were, both of us come from poor families and poor backgrounds, and so we just didn't have anything like that. So that was an opportunity, and I've, to this day, I'm very thankful to Brother Old Pettigrew, Chickasha, Oklahoma, for giving us that opportunity. And so we made that deal. And I had gotten a job when I got out of the Navy working for this machine shop. I had learned that trade in the military and I had a good job and I was making good money. And we were doing a lot of contract work for Halliburton. Y'all have heard of them, haven't you? We were doing a lot of work for Halliburton. And we was working 9 hour days, 6 days a week. How many of that? 6 9s, 54. And everything over 40 hours a week was time and a half. Well, I was making good money by the hour plus time and a half. I was making pretty good money. Margaret would come to the shop, and she would drive up, and I would go up. We'd get paid, but I still had overtime to do that evening, and I'd take my check, and I'd go out and give it to her, and she'd go deposit it in the bank. I asked the boss, he asked me to work on Sunday, and I said, man, I haven't even got time to spend the money that I make now. Well, look at all the money you're making. I said, but I haven't got time to spend it, you know, for crying out loud, my wife's spending it. She really wasn't. But then, you know what happened just before Christmas, after about a year and a half, just before Christmas? Halliburton, you know, stinking rascals, decided that they could do all of that machine work just as well as we could, and they pulled everything out of our shop. And here we were. Our boss was just doing everything in his power to keep from laying anybody off, keeping his hands, and keeping us busy. And we did all kinds of odd jobs, 40 hours a week. We go from 55 hours a week to 40 hours a week. We go from 20 hours of overtime a week to no overtime a week. You think that didn't take some doing? This is when we put the budget together. Now, we had rented a house that was furnished. Somebody else had wore out old furniture is what we lived in whenever we lived in Chickasha. We bought that place. We had to have our own furniture, so we bought it. And how did we buy it? So much a month. So we had a furniture payment. Is that on there? We had a house payment. We had our monthly food cost. And by 1968, we had a one-year-old, a two-year-old, and a three-year-old, all in cloth diapers. Margaret washing clothes on a wringer wash machine on the back porch. But that was neither here nor there. But our monthly food cost was, as you can see, milk, milk, milk. She was helping me put this together. I said, help me remember what all we had. And I put monthly food cost, and she said, milk, milk, milk. So I put down milk, milk, milk. We had a car payment. We had utilities. We had a well, so we didn't have a water bill. We had a well, and it seemed like I worked on all the time. We had an electric bill. We had a propane bill. Had to pay 9 cents a gallon for propane. Can you still get that for 9 cents a gallon? My son used to sell that here a while back, a few years ago, close to $4 a gallon. We had a phone bill. We had to have car insurance. Life insurance, yeah, we did. We bought a life insurance policy while we was in California, $10 a month. Household furniture, we had bought that on a monthly payment plan. Clothes, we needed to have clothes. We never had enough to buy clothes, but we could get a Penny's credit card and pay $5 a month. That's the way it started out. Wasn't long until it was $20 a month. You know what I mean? And it just kept getting bigger, and we kept buying more clothes. But it was paid each month. Our first baby cost $25. That was in the military, and if we'd been closer to a military base, it wouldn't cost that much, but it cost $25. Our second baby cost $250. Our third baby cost $350. Both of those babies we financed. So we're paying this out. This is what our monthly payments was. And this is what we wrote down. And Sunday we went to church. Did anybody see a problem with what I've got here? What did we allow for church? Not one red cent. Not one red cent. And I was lucky if I had a dollar when they passed a collection plate around to put in. You talk about feeling shame. You talk about feeling like we're really. So we said, hey, come on, we need to work that in here. So we did. And it was just a little dibbly math about like that. And that's where it was, right at the bottom of the list. A couple of months went by, and I told Margaret one day, I said, honey, this is killing me. We've got to do something else. I said, let's look at this differently. Let's try to put first things first. Proverbs 3, verse 9, honor the Lord with your possessions, and with the first fruits of all your increase. So your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. Now, I didn't have any barns, and I didn't have any vats, but we decided that that's what we were going to try to do. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things, the material things of life that Jesus had been describing that was necessary for life, will be added to you. So this is what we did with our budget plan. We flipped that and we put the church contribution first. And we said and we reasoned together about how much we would like to give based on what we were making and what we would like to give. And she would come up with a figure and I'd say, but there's no way we can do that. But we wrestled around with it and we talked about it and finally we settled on a price and we still, every time we added it up, there was never enough money. Never enough. But do you know what? We never bounced a check. We never missed a contribution. It wasn't that much. I'm not bragging. I don't want this to sound like we're bragging because we had, there was nothing to brag about, really, other than the fact that we tried to do the put the right thing first. And we always made it. How'd you make it? Well, it'd be some farmer that would come in there and with a broken something or another, and the boss would say, "But Gene, would you mind staying an hour or two and get this guy fixed up and get him back in the field?" And I'd get an hour overtime. Or there'd be some lady that would come by and say, "It's been a long time since we've been to the picture show. Margaret, could you keep our kids? We'll pay you a couple of dollars an hour while we go to the picture show or whatever." And she'd make a little extra money. It never failed. We always had enough. It took about 6 months before our company began to turn things around and we were back to working more hours than we could shake a stick at and we had more money than we needed to have, really. But you understand? This is what I did with Plainview, Texas, whenever I made a suggestion with them down there, and we were doing a similar program that we had. If you're going to have a budget, this is for young married couples. I know it doesn't apply to anybody here, but this was our suggestion. If you can make the money to make all of these things fit that we have listed here, then you're doing well. Try to stay within that framework and you'll be better off and you'll be successful.